I distinctly remember the day during fourth grade when I carried every single subject home from school with me because I had completed none of them. It suddenly dawned upon me that if I wanted to succeed at school and ultimately at life, that I was going to need to learn how to pay attention. However, I had developed some excessively poor habits, and it took me years to correct them. In fact, they were not corrected even while I was in school, and I'm not sure I'm done correcting them yet. Enough talking about me. My younger brother Josiah was an alcohol baby, and as such, his development has been basically stalled at approximately the intellectual ability of a 12-year-old. However, he's extremely intelligent. In fact, if he met any one of you and you told him where you were from, who your family was, and the names of several of your brothers and sisters, and he happened to meet one of your brothers or sisters 2 years later, or even in some cases 10, he would ask about you and how you're doing and whether you're still doing the occupation you had been doing and so on. And if you really want to get him excited, just ask him about airplanes. He can remember to this day distinctly which airline he flew on, what type of plane it was, where we landed, how long the layover was, and so on and so forth about every air travel he's experienced. And living in California, he has experienced quite a number of flights. I do not know the name of the man, but I was recently told that there is a man at Faith Builders. My name's all mixed up. Faith Mission Home, who, if you tell him your birthday, he can tell you which day of the week that it was. Some of you have heard this before. Many people will tell you that this man is developmentally delayed, incapable. How many of you would be capable of doing that if I told you that I was born on July 23rd, 1979? Anyone know what day of the week that was? Whoa. You all are developmentally delayed. Sorry for you. How many of you think that Albert Einstein was a genius? Fairly unanimous belief that he was a genius. How many of you think that he was a fast student in school? How many of you have heard of Niels Bohr? You may not have heard of this man, but he is the one who drew that model of an atom where you see a cluster of, I can't even say the name of him now. Thank you. Where you see a cluster in the center with electrons and protons floating around it. That's the Bohr model of the atom, designed by a man named Niels Bohr, who also was not a fast student in school. How many of you think that Thomas Edison was a fast student in school? He was not. Eli Whitney, think he was a fast student in school? He was not. All four of these men had one thing in common. Does anyone know what it was? Thinking about Thomas Edison may help you more than thinking about the others. Anyone know anything about Thomas Edison, any statements that he made that give you an index into his character? Let me give you a really big hint. He said, success is 1% inspiration and 99%
perspiration.
Thomas Edison had determination. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this later. I want you just to remember that Albert Einstein, Niels Bohr, Thomas Edison, Eli Whitney, you think of many, many successful people in the past. They were not necessarily extremely fast thinkers. They were simply extremely determined thinkers. This class is about concentration and retention development. And this is going to be a little bit difficult with so many of you in here. I want this class to be personal, so I am actually going to ask for you all to give me some names and traits. I gave you some of people that I know, my brother, for example. I would like for this to become personal enough that we can actually start talking about Josiah's. Okay? So if you can relax with me enough, some of you are probably thinking about a particular student that you work with. Could you just tell me their name and what it is that you expect to struggle with this year? Okay, this is not, you know, violating any ethical things, right? We're allowed to talk about your students here. All right, so anyone?
Abigail.
Abigail.
She is developmentally delayed and autistic. Everything, every little detail, every noise comes at her as big as everything else. So she can't tune out things.
Okay. And autistic. And I can't remember what they call that when they can't tune things out, but I'm familiar with that. Very good. Thank you for telling us about Abigail. I'm sure there's more.
Zach.
Stacy. So, lack of motivation. Very good. Anyone else? There are only two teachers in here teaching slow students this year. I am shocked. Yes.
Bryce.
Bryce. Thank you. Anyone else? You don't have to share the name. Thank you for those of you who did. I do want you to be thinking the name of the student you're thinking about while we're talking here. And I do not intend to do all the talking. This many people, I should be able to ask a question and you all can carry it, right? I hope. So now, this might be easier for some of you to answer. What have you done to help your slow students already? You can help kickstart this. What have you done to help your slow students? Those of you who taught more than one day with a slow student have done something, I'm sure. What did you do? I'll give you some examples of some things that I've done. For example, with a little boy who could not seem to capture the concept of letters making sounds. I would begin the way the books say by pointing to the letter and having it make a sound. However, this person was very mechanical, and so he needed to be doing things. So he would have to say to himself, over and over. And I got to where I realized that this person, to understand that, would have to be moving and whispering for him to think. And so I said, it's okay for you to move and whisper at your desk. That's okay. So he would sit at his desk reading. Okay, that's just fine. All right. Whatever it takes. I'm a firm believer in using all means to teach all men, or in this case, all children. Have any of you used something aside from? This says ah, okay? We're ready to go on to eh, right? No, it doesn't work that way. What have you done to help your slow students? Mm-hmm. So you would point to the chair, and that means.
Okay. I pointed to three drawers, and so somehow that stuck.
Very good. No, that is definitely a method. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but thank you for bringing that up. Using an object to remind a student of a certain thing. All right. So, for example, we're going to use my pen. All right. It is green. And green reminds me of a certain state in the Union that has water all around it. Hawaii. Okay, so now, whenever I hold this up and go like this, I want all of you to say Hawaii. Okay?
Hawaii.
All right. Now, when I hold it up, you're going to look at it. We're going to go around in a circle, and you're going to say Hawaii is surrounded by blue water. Okay? Because this is blue, right? More or less. Right, here we go.
Hawaii is surrounded by blue water.
What circle? Sorry. What shape was I drawing in the air? Sorry. Okay, now you are going to do this with your own hand. All right? Because we're saying the word surrounded. All right? And if a person beside you is wearing blue, you are going to tap the part of them that is blue. Okay? Whatever, it's a shirt or whatever. All right? So this is going to become a group exercise. All right, so now here we go.
Hawaii is surrounded by blue water.
Very good. All right. You will probably never forget that, and we'll get into why that works and so on. The potential for concentration and retention is far beyond what we typically believe. All right? We seldom give people credit for their intelligence. We just think that because you don't think like I do, you must be stupid. I mean, it's so obvious to me that this says, right? But if your mind does not think that way, then we tend to discount the other person's intelligence. I think you're rather intelligent, don't get me wrong, please. Our brains have an extremely high capacity. In fact, there was a man named Howard Hendricks, a very famous teacher, who visited with a professor in Philadelphia who had looked at many, many brains of dead people. I don't know if he'd looked at any living people's brains or not. And Howard Hendricks asked him, how many of them were worn out? And he said, most of them were barely used. So if you're needing one, you might call this man in. I don't know if they're on sale, you know, or not. They might be running a discount at the Shop of Shalom for those of you who like shopping. Our brains are extremely efficiently designed. And everything that you know, everything you can remember, is really nothing more than an electrical circuit in your brain. Okay, that's how we remember things. And what is intriguing is that the more neurons that are connected, the better. Which is why the more things that we do to remember that Hawaii is surrounded by blue water, the more likely you are to remember that. We'll get into that a little bit more later. I think that, once again, our minds, I just told you, we tend to discredit their abilities. Yesterday, when Brother Howard was talking, and he got to telling us about students who memorized 2,150 verses. And do you think that that was the only thing that those people could remember? No. Let me tell you something about your brain. And the more you memorize, the more capacity you have to memorize. Can you believe that? So a student who is having trouble learning that this means "ah" will actually be blessed by getting a larger memory verse. I am not joking. Okay? And you may need to use some unique methods to get them to memorize that. But expanding your memory does not, you're not like a computer. Okay, you know, you don't get up to 200 gigabytes and then the thing crashes. All right, you get up to in your brain, you get to 200 gigabytes and suddenly it is capable now of 200,000 gigabytes. Whereas previously maybe it only had a capacity of 50,000 or whatever. You get the idea. God created us with available senses, All of you have how many senses, basically? Five. Those are all methods of intake for your brain. How many did Helen Keller have? Two. And did that make her an unintelligent person? Was she incapable of learning? No. How many of your students are like Helen Keller? Zero. So, how are we going to teach these students who appear to be difficult to reach? You must seek to understand more than to be understood. Okay? If I want to get something across to you and it's not making sense to you, whose fault is that? It's my fault. Because it does make sense to you in some way. And it's my job to figure out which way it is. If the way I presented it to you didn't make sense, that's my fault. I don't understand you well enough to help you understand what I want you to understand. Is that confusing? But please, seek to understand rather than be understood. There are four basic methods that people learn. The first method, I think, anyway, is the kinesthetic method. Almost all babies begin this. You'll see a little child lying in a crib, and they go like this, and they start laughing. And then they do it again, and they laugh. Why are they laughing? Because they just realized that they can move their own arm. That is kinesthetic learning that by doing. It is learning by doing. How did you learn how to ride a bike? By reading a book about bike riding. By having Lyndon tell you, these are the three most important things about bike riding. By having Michael demonstrate how to ride a bike for you. He can do it, so you can too, right? Hop on here, Trenton. Ride this bike. Did you learn by any of those methods? No. The only way to learn how to ride a bike is to?
Ride a bike.
That is kinesthetic learning. Okay. Auditory learning. This is the way most people learn how to talk, right? Majority of us learn a language by hearing it. You hear new words and so on. This is how you learn a new song. So when Brother Howard was teaching us this song the other day, that was auditory learning. It was through your ears. Visual. How many of you enjoyed seeing all those pictures this morning? That's visual learning. And you will remember those pictures far better than you will remember anything that Howard said. Pictures are powerful. This is why you should have posters on your wall in your classroom. And it's why you should draw pictures on your board. If your book says, draw a picture of an apple, you don't have to be an excellent artist. You just have to be able to give them the idea. This is, and you give them a picture to go along with it. That's visual learning. How many of you remember the name of Howard's school? How many of you see a picture when you think about the name of Howard's school? So I'm talking about reading. This is, honestly, I think the way that we least enjoy learning. There are some people who enjoy this. For example, I think Steve Overholt's one of them. He just reads these, you know, gigantic books and so on and so on. But you are capable of that. For example, how many of you remember the name of the tribe that Denny talked about yesterday? How do you remember it? Because you saw a word written on the board. Am I correct? That's reading. Those are the four basic methods that people learn. One fact that I want you to remember very, very well is that children are inquisitive. They want to learn. Right? God has primed them to learn. So when they come into your classroom, they are expecting you to somehow impart knowledge to them. They want you to succeed at it. And when you present something in a way that is unfamiliar to them and that does not make sense, it hurts them. And they are disappointed in you as a teacher. If you don't believe me, just try it and watch them burst into tears. Okay? They're crying not because they're frustrated with themselves. They are partly. Trust me, they're probably more frustrated with you. They expected you to touch them, and you missed. And that hurts for me to say that as a teacher, because I've done that. Okay. But it's true. Those children walk into your classroom expecting you to teach them. They ask you questions. Teach them how to ask good questions. Lead them. When they walk in and they say, "How do the lights work?" They launch into a wonderfully long thing. Start by asking them, "Well, how do you think they work?" "Well, you turn on the switch." "Well, yeah, so what happens?" Teach by asking questions. Teach them to ask good questions. Children are very quick to try something new. And they want two things when they walk in your classroom. I told you they want you to teach them. Here's what they basically expect. Their children have two expectations. Every single day they walk in your classroom, they want a challenge. But then they want to succeed at that challenge. And you as the teacher need to learn how to challenge your students on a daily basis. And also, what they're capable of. Because if Derek walks into my classroom and I say, "Today, Derek, I'm going to have you copying the Iliad," he'll probably pass out. But if I say, "Today, Derek, we're going to have you copy the chapter titles from the Iliad," oh, he can handle that. The main ideas and so on. Students, they want a challenge, but they want to know that they are capable of succeeding. And you have to learn to know them well enough to give them a nugget of truth, a lesson to work on, something to do that's bite-sized for them. And once again, this comes back to understanding the people you're working with. You don't have my students, I'll have your students. You need to get to know the ones that you've got. Some more questions here. How is each person unique? How is it that this whole row of young ladies sitting up here, that they're all different? How did God do that? Maybe we should ask, why does he do that? Why is there no repetition of design in this room? We've got a fairly large class here, and I don't see anyone that looks like I'm looking in the mirror. And that's probably a good thing. It's much easier on the eyes. Why is that? Why did God make everyone different? Why is there more than one kind of flower, ladies? Why are there not only red roses? How would a flower garden look with only one kind of flower? Anyone like that? Why not? What do I want to pick on? You like variety. Thank you. Isn't there beauty in variety? I think there is. I think God thinks there is. If you don't believe me, look at the stars tonight. They are not all the same. Okay? And that's just one little example. Walk outside and look at the trees. They're not all the same. God is trying to tell us something when we look at these things, and that is that God enjoys and appreciates variety. We need to learn to enjoy, appreciate the uniqueness of our students. They will know if it is okay with you that they think differently from the way that you do. Right? If that frustrates you and works on your patience to the point that you feel like you're going to break on a daily basis, they know. They can tell. So another question. What can we do to better understand challenged students? What can you do to better understand than Abigail, who's autistic, who can't tune out other sounds in the classroom? Or Zach, who's spacey and just some days he works hard and other days he could care less. Or a Bryce, whose mother damaged his mind before he ever had a chance in life, and who struggles to be able to remember something as simple as 2 plus 3. What can we do? I keep telling you to try to understand rather than be understood. What can you do to understand these people? Denny.
I think sometimes as teachers, we, at least for me, we sit around and we try and think of the best way that we can catch the student, and the whole time we're losing time. We should be feel free to try a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Because we might land on that perfect thing by trying different things.
Okay, I like that. So rather than trying to, on our own, think of what is the best way, we need to be like a child and just go ahead and try some different things, and we may accidentally hit the right one. I'll tell you a story about one that happened to me. During my first year of teaching, I had a student who consistently worked on math for the entire school day. And this became extremely troubling to me. I was convinced that this girl was probably going to fail. And that somehow it was her own fault. And her parents' fault. I'm just being honest, that's how I felt. Until one of my co-teachers said, well, what is it that she's working on so long? I said, well, she gets to the reading problems and then just stalls. It's like she shuts off when we get there. And she'll work on reading problems for 3/4 of a school day. And my co-teacher said, have you ever tried reading the reading problems to her? And letting her visualize them in her mind? And I said, no, why would I do that? She said, because she can't read and see pictures at the same time. And I said, there's people like that? And she said, yes. I think she might have been one of them. But anyway. So the next day, I told this student, you work on all the facts in your lesson, and when you are ready to do the reading problems, would you just raise your hand, and I'm going to come read them to you. And she was all excited about trying something new. Very willing to do that. So I see her raise her hand and walk over beside her desk, and she opens her book, and I say, okay, close your eyes, and I'm going to read this problem to you. And so I read the problem to her, and before I had finished uttering the last word, she was writing the answer down in her book. She had done all the calculations in a rather difficult sixth grade math problem in her head while I was talking. And this was the way we continued working. At the end of that year, I found out that this girl's IQ was in the top 1% of the population in the United States, quite a bit above my own. And it was my fault that she'd struggled so long. So please, try new things. Thank you for that, Denny. Any other ideas about how to understand these students better? Because if we want to be able to teach them to concentrate, we have to understand the way they think, not the way we think. If not, we're going to go on. The value of concentration and retention. There's a saying that goes like this: if you don't see the value in what you don't see, you won't try to see it. I'll say that again. If you don't see the value in what you don't see, you won't try to see it. For example, if I told you that there was something behind the whiteboard that you haven't seen yet, but I don't tell you that it's at all valuable, you're not going to be that excited about it. If I happen to tell you that it was the Mona Lisa, someone will probably be knocking the whiteboard out of the way, right? Because you want to see the Mona Lisa. Most of you have probably seen copies of it and so on. This is what separates ordinary men and geniuses. Remember I told you at the beginning that those four men that I mentioned were all extremely determined men. Another statement. The difference between an ordinary man and a genius is the length of time that the genius can pay attention to a single problem. So, by teaching a child how to concentrate, we are increasing their genius. And which of your children would not want to be a genius? Which of you would not want all of your students to become geniuses? The way to do that? Teach them to concentrate. How do we do that? Much easier said than done, right? Typically, most students come into your classroom with approximately an attention span of their age in minutes. For example, a first grader typically has an attention span of 6 to 8 minutes. All right, that's as long as you can expect them to pay attention to one thing without you shifting gears. An eighth grader should be able to pay attention to one thing for at least 13 to 15 minutes. That sounds rather discouraging, doesn't it? Our expectations should be far above that. So we need to teach these students, yes, they come into school with this itty-bitty attention span. They are not used to paying attention to one thing for a long time at home. You know, mom might have told them to set the table, and they can do that in 5 to 10 minutes, and then their mind is shifted onto something else. We have to train them to focus on one thing if we want them to be able, if we want to increase their genius. So don't just be satisfied with that length of attention span. Promote perseverance. How do we do that? Sometimes we have to deal with the distractions. Miss Bryce, I'm sorry. Abigail, you said that she can't tune other things out. Someone this morning mentioned quietness. Some of these students actually need more quietness in your classroom than an average student does. And be aware of that. Some of them may actually do better studying outside your classroom because they can't tune you out while you're up here having classes. They're listening to every single word you're saying. They can't shut you up. And whose fault is it they can't learn? Or maybe it happens to be your whole classroom because there's a red-winged blackbird migration and they're landing on the schoolhouse and in the playground. And you suddenly realize that you're no competition for red-winged blackbirds. All right? That happened to me. What is better in a situation like that is satisfy their curiosity. I told my students, okay, everybody, just go to the windows and watch the birds for a while. When you're done watching the birds, come back and I've got some stuff for you, okay? And we did. And once they were done, they could actually pay attention to me again. They were done with the birds. Their attention span's only so long, okay? So it's okay to do that. And some of these children need that. They may need to satisfy their curiosity. I just want to repeat. This increases these students' chance of succeeding in life. So please, teach them the value of concentrating. It changes their belief window. Each of you has a belief window. If you don't believe me, let me just use an example. Let's say you're walking down the street in town, and suddenly you see a huge Doberman Pinscher in front of you. Okay. What do you do? Do you totally freeze and hope that it can't see you? Do you immediately launch into full freak mode and run screaming down the street, hoping that there is a policeman with a machine gun behind you who can take out this menace? Or do you say, come here, puppy? See, all of those reactions have to do with what you believe about Doberman Pinschers. All right? Teaching your students to concentrate actually is going to change the way they react to things in life. It's going to improve their chances of coping with life, with Doberman Pinschers, with other people. Okay? It's extremely important that you change their belief window, the way this thing that's in front of their eyes that they see the whole world through. And along with this, it improves their ability to be used by God. I think that's an extremely important thing for us to understand. When we change a student's belief window, the way they react to their own inabilities, for example, we may be increasing the chance that God can take that person to the mission field and do something with them, or even just use them at home. Okay? There's some powerful things to think about. I think the most important thing about teaching students to concentrate and to remember things is that it prepares them to hear God Himself. Okay? The concept of salvation, the concept of accountability to God, is not something you can get in a 7-minute attention span. Right? God tends to speak quietly and slowly. I'm not saying He can't do that, right? I think people's minds are kind of like balloons. I already told you that if they memorize, it actually increases their memory. If we stretch them, they're easier to put stuff into. Right? So lower grade teachers, I'm just going to tell you, put a lot of responsibility on you. Do that stretching right away when they get there. Stretch these little minds every direction you can. If the method of stretching involves having them play with Legos for 20 minutes and telling them they have to keep playing with Legos, they can't quit. Whatever it takes, they have got to learn to focus on one thing for longer than their age in minutes. It promotes an awareness of abstract ideas. Many abstract ideas, for example, concepts of nature that we can't see, like the earth rotating around the sun. How many of you have observed that personally? Exactly. Okay. And yet we believe that. It's an abstract idea that takes some concentration to be able to understand. Same thing with some microbial ideas. So it conditions a student's heart to hear God calling when they come to that age of accountability. Once again, to get students to concentrate, you're going to have to convince them of the value of concentration. What are some ways we can salt our students' oats? Any ideas? All right. That's what the rest of this is about. Okay, now we're at the good part. So I'm very quickly going to go over 7 stimuli. I already mentioned pictures. The next one is going to be stories. I think almost across the board, people are pre-programmed to remember things by hearing them in stories. For example, the Old Testament teaches many things by stories. You know, we have whale bait, lion bait, and so on. And we remember these. Oh, giant bait was the other one. You know, say what?
Bear and lion bait.
Oh, bear and lion bait. Bear, lion, and giant bait. Yeah, okay. So we have whale bait, lion bait. You all know who that is, right? And then we have bear, lion, and giant bait. And king bait, too, I guess. So I'll try to kill them as well. So. But these are all stories that we can relate to. We remember those things, those truths in stories. Teach by telling stories. If you need to teach that this little owl was hanging on the tree, and along came Abel and ate the owl, or whatever, you know. Put it into a story that they can remember this whole thing. The alphabet can be used to teach different things. Children are familiar with the alphabet, and so you tell them this is the A, this is the B, this is the C. Objects. Charity already mentioned that. For example, the fire alarm in here is Jupiter, all right? And the thermostat is Mars. And then the light switches are the moon, all right? And so on, and the door is Earth. And we get ideas and we start looking at those things. And so every time we see the fire alarm, we think about Jupiter and so on. It doesn't have to even have any real relationship, just it has to teach something. For example, God did this with the tabernacle. Everything in the tabernacle represented something, but very few of those things were really that close in shape. They weren't necessarily any closer in shape than the fire alarm is to Jupiter. God was using that. Drama. And when I say drama, I'm not talking about acting. I'm talking about emotional stories. Stories that stir the heart. I enjoy these stories. Stories like we love the story about Naaman. How he came to the land of Israel with this huge expectation, and he was so disappointed, and he wants to leave, and his slave said, "No, don't. Go ahead and try it anyway." Music. We learn the ABCs by singing them, right? Okay. It's a powerful way of remembering. Some of these little children need to learn this by singing a song. If you have to make up a song, it doesn't have to be a long one. It teaches. And graphs, charts, illustrations, whatever. We already did this, but we might say that this says ah, but it's really a swing set. Okay? And if that's what it takes for the students to remember that that's ah, that's okay. All right? Big memories. The bigger the memory, the better it is. So let's just try this again.
Hawaii is surrounded by blue water.
See what I'm talking about? Okay. That's easier. Honestly, that's easier to remember than Hawaii. I'm not joking. All right. The bigger the memory, the better. For example, we've got Logan sitting over here, and we're going to imagine, for those of you who don't know Logan, would you mind raising your hand? I'm sorry to pick you on you. I hope you don't mind this. We're going to help you remember Logan. I want you to picture him with mustard draped completely over him. And old, day-old pickles on top of the mustard. And that all covered in ice cream. That doesn't matter, but when you all see Logan, you'll see this mustard pickled ice cream guy, and you'll know who he is. That's Logan. Yeah, he's the guy with the mustard and the ice cream. It's great. The bigger the memory, the better, and up to a point, the weirder, the better. When I said that the fire alarm was Jupiter, that wasn't a mistake, okay? Fire alarms and Jupiter have nothing to do with each other. That's okay. Think about stories that you learned, like the little red hen. Can she really cook? But that's a much better story than the little girl who stuck to her work. Mm-hmm. Goldilocks and the Three Bears is far better than the curious boy who got in trouble. Mm-hmm. Okay? Review is extremely important for many of these students. Learning to concentrate. This comes back to understanding them. As teachers, go back to what they do remember. Okay? So if they can't remember 2 plus 3, back up and say, do you know what 2 plus 2 is? If they don't remember that, ask them if they know what 1 plus 1 is. Go back to something they know and build on that. So if this is 1 plus 1, all we're going to do is add 2 more to each number. Okay? That's all we're doing. All right. You have to get to what they already know. You have to start with where they are.